Blog Talk Radio.
Today, which is going to be Michael Snell Fikema, and we're going to be talking about the poetry industry today. And I don't know if Michael, you have chimed in as of yet. If you haven't pushed one, be sure to do that so that you can come on into the studio. But we want to be able to talk about the poetry industry because there's some things that are going on that is unaware to the average person who works at the poultry plant. Not that they're ignorant of it, but I'm talking about the general public. And that's why we have Michael Snell Fikema on the program today to talk about some of these concerns. So, Michael, are you on the air with me today? Michael, be sure to push one. Okay. All righty. Well, Michael, if you're not on, we can't interview you, but I encourage you to push one so that you can get the host queue can queue you in so we can carry on our program today. But those of you that want to be a part of today's program, feel free to give us a call at 347-850-1598. So we're going to take a break, and we'll come right back and see if we can try to locate Michael so we can get him as today's guest on what's happening in the poetry industry right here in the Shenandoah Valley.
Stan, you can't hear me?
Oh, you're on. Okay.
Yeah, I'm on.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I didn't
yeah,
know
I
you
pressed
were on.
One.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, no,
okay.
I'm sorry. But anyway, I am here now.
Okay, good. Well, Michael, we're so glad that you're on the program today. This comes out of concern about some of the things that are happening in the poetry industry. And many of you don't know, but right here in the Virginia, you're talking about the chicken laying the golden egg. Well, it most certainly is, because the poultry industry here in Virginia is a $13.7 billion industry. And this comes from a recent study where it just shows that the poultry industry business, it adds billions to the Virginia economy. And so that's a lot of chickens and turkeys being eaten by people, not only on Thanksgiving Day, but throughout the course of the year. That's a lot of money. And which made our purpose for having this program today. So, Michael, glad to have you on the program today.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the things that is happening in the poetry industry, and I'm aware of some of it, which is why it mirrors this program. I want to bring you on to highlight it with Straight Talk, because that's what this program is all about. It's about telling it like it is, and I know that having you on the program, you'll do that. Michael is a local activist. You see him constantly in the news page. Standing up for a cause, was very active in the Occupy movement, but he's just stands up against injustice anywhere. And so, Michael, could you kind of just inform us why are you here today, and what's going on in the poultry industry, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry here in Virginia that needs to be brought to the attention of the general public?
Yeah, well, I think that the biggest concern in respect to the situation with the poultry workers is simply the question of their safety on the job and their exposure to very high rates of injury. And the reason for that is basically the speed, at least a major reason, is the speed at which the line is operated.
Mm-hmm.
And the poultry industry, along with the meat industry in general, kind of has undergone a certain evolution over the past half a century. And that has involved increasingly turning an industry that has always been dangerous and dirty in many ways, but at one time had much stronger unions and therefore had better support for the workers in terms of ensuring their safety and ensuring that the production line wasn't operating at too rapid of a speed and so on. But the industry underwent an evolution in which largely what happened was that it began to rely upon a workforce that consisted of immigrants, many of them undocumented, and this has created a situation in which there's been much less of a presence of unions, and the workers are much more subject to speed up in the production line, which drastically increases the danger involved in this job. And speeding the production line had already been sped up earlier in the 80s and 90s, but at the beginning of 2000, the speed was doubled and went from 12 turkeys a minute to up to 22 turkeys a minute.
Now,
and,
wait a minute. Did I hear you say 12 turkeys a minute?
Yeah, 22 turkeys a minute, almost doubling it, the rate of speed. And the reason this is important is that this higher speed of the production line creates a situation where repetitive motion syndrome injuries or carpal tunnel syndrome become much more common because of the number of cuts, the number of motions that have to be made repeatedly throughout the day. This occurs in often cold and clammy conditions, which also makes the repetitive motion injuries much more common. The average poultry worker makes up to 20,000 cuts a day, and that's just an extraordinary amount of cuts. And, you know, if you're going at a higher speed, the chances that you're going to get cut or get injured increases significantly.
Now, Michael, when there is an injury that happens on the job, what recourse does some of the workers have in terms of compensation or getting their medical care? Have you heard stories of any incidents that need to be brought to our attention?
Yeah, I have heard stories from workers who I was involved with the Labor Subcommittee of Faith and Action, which did focus in on this issue and do some investigation and talked with some of the workers locally. And they basically told stories of frustration and inability to really get any kind of adequate compensation for their injuries. Just simply the way in which things are set up in terms of the nurse and the doctor are basically working for the company and tends not to respond to the injuries with the seriousness that they merit, and instead they give them some aspirin or Tylenol or something like that and don't really listen to the complaints of the workers and don't really take it that seriously. And if the workers keep pushing to get some kind of compensation, they can end up being dismissed. And so this kind of atmosphere discourages workers from even reporting injuries because it doesn't seem like it's going to be very likely to get any results, and in fact could end up in your dismissal.
Which brings us to the next concern is efforts being made to bring a union here. Why is it that the company does not, first of all, a union here? And then secondly, why are they coming here?
Well, I mean, the companies, I think responsible companies, actually realize that a union is good for an industry, mm-hmm. because it can stabilize their relationships with their labor force and help create a healthier labor force with a better attitude. But unfortunately, sometimes employers have gotten into taking kind of the low road, mm-hmm. and they're mostly what they're after is as much production as possible, as cheaply mm-hmm. as possible. And that's mm-hmm. a way to make money, but it's not one that respects the rights of workers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a union is going to give the workers representation. But even more than that, one of the things that a union does, and it may do this even before it actually is voted for and establishes the union for the workers, is it can help inform them of their rights. And it can be a resource for workers even before they've chosen to have a union. Mm-hmm. I think that the UFCW, which has begun to become involved in this community, is taking a very wise approach. They are really focusing on making connections to the community and to the workers, and on educating the workers through a worker center, and slowly developing relationships with the workers in the community in order to build towards the kind of representation that they'll need.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does that UFCW stand for?
United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
Okay. And so this would help to provide some recourse for the workers who are now just there at the whim of the company, and when they complain or try to bring to attention some of the injuries and some of the speeding up of the line and so forth, they're ostracized because of that. And so,
there's a whole lot that a union can do, and as I said, even before one has been officially organized, is that they can support the workers in documenting
mm-hmm.
what is happening to them, and also
mm-hmm.
help them and support them in terms of getting a better response to their claims for compensation. And in certain instances, the unions can support the workers in making a request to OSHA that OSHA come and inspect the plant. The Occupational
mm-hmm.
Safety and Health Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the problems in the poultry industry is just that they simply reduce the number of inspectors, and
mm-hmm.
OSHA is completely overloaded. And so
mm-hmm.
it is not necessarily going to come to a place to inspect it unless they get a request, unless there's some pressure, unless it's pushed through the bureaucracy. In an organized way. You know, I mean, this
mm-hmm.
is just part of a general climate that's been created in this country really since the Reagan Revolution, which was,
mm-hmm.
impactful government regulation and the strength of unions. And it's just left a lot of spaces of with no adequate regulation and without the kind of organized support that workers need in order to be treated like human beings.
Well, you know, this kind of seems like a David and Goliath situation, and we're right here in the Shenandoah Valley, which happens to be the capital of the poultry industry. And one of the things that I like what you said is that when the union comes, it comes also to be involved in the community. And
yes.
In what ways would that help to enhance the workers that are working at the poultry plant?
Well, it really makes a difference if there's strong community support for workers'
mm-hmm.
rights. And there's real potential for that here in Harrisonburg.
Mm-hmm.
And one example of that is with the religious community and with
mm-hmm.
Faith in Action. Faith in Action has already begun the process of listening to the workers and breaking down the wall of kind of the hidden in the darkness of because, you know, all this happens behind these walls, and it's not something that's reported on or discussed a lot in the local media. And so people eat their chicken and their turkey, but they're not necessarily aware of the real cost of that chicken and turkey in terms of how it's affecting the lives of the workers that produce it. And, you know, people have a conscience. And when they become aware of those conditions, I think the response of most people is to support the efforts of the workers to improve their situation. And there are examples. For example, a town called Morristown, Tennessee. And in Morristown, they worked very strongly, the union did, with the community and with the churches. And the end result was that when it came time to have a union election, the company actually pledged that it would not interfere in the election. And it would remain neutral, which is very unusual. But it was a response to the very strong community support that was built up over a long period of time for the efforts of the workers. And that's certainly something that is very possible to do here in Harrisonburg, through the churches, through popular and community organizations. We can have a whole process by which the community becomes educated about what's happening to the workers and their need for support.
Now, I know you as a local activist and have a strong commitment and concern to make a difference. This happens to be Black History Month, the month of February, and as you know, Dr. King, Martin Luther King, was very involved in the sanitation strike, which was in Memphis, Tennessee, as a matter of fact, which he gave his life for. And there was deplorable conditions there. But you would think that in the 21st century that we would not see situations that exist like this. It's almost like right up under our noses is a third world country situation that's happening.
That's right.
Let alone in terms of the equipment and that. So why is it that you're so personally involved in how they have put you as a spokesperson to work with them in terms of mobilizing the community to make a difference concerning some of these circumstances that are happening right here in the Shenandoah Valley?
Yeah, well, I think that there's a number of things. I mean, one thing is I've also worked as a packing house worker many years ago, but so I have some sense of how difficult that job is. That's one thing. The other thing is that I really came of age as an activist during the 1980s and the Reagan period, when the Reagan administration was prosecuting the wars in Central America. And I learned by traveling in Mexico and Central America and living there and by my involvement with supporting the people and their struggles in those areas, what was going on there, which was a real window into how the global economy was being reshaped in the interests of capital and against the interests of labor. And a big part of that is to exploit workers in a situation where they are vulnerable. Now, frequently this takes the route of businesses moving from the United States, say, to Mexico and to the factories in Mexico, or eventually what happened was that they moved to China and El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala, and essentially taking advantage of a situation where there is a vast quantity of unemployed people that are desperately poor. You have a government that is corrupt and basically collaborates with foreign business interests. And so they're able to get people to work for wages that, for instance, in the auto industry, were 17 times lower in Hermosillo, Mexico, than they were in Detroit, Michigan. And so this has created an enormous incentive for capital to relocate in these areas so they can exploit these vulnerable workers. And that is done not only in order to gain super profits, which it has achieved, but also in order to undermine the power of workers and labor in the United States, because they can say to labor in the United States, you know, you have to accept the wages and conditions and benefits that we're willing to give you. In fact, we want you to cut them back from what they were, or else we're going to go to Mexico or we're going to go to China. So I've seen this whole global economy take shape. And, you know, in Central America, the people that resisted it, that wanted land reform and they wanted an honest government that was focused on the interests of the people, they were murdered. And they were repressed by governments that were financed and supported by the United States. So this was a very bloody affair. And I've seen this take place. Now, you have certain situations that are much more difficult to be done in other countries because they have to do with markets that they need to be closer to. One of those is meatpacking. And so in that instance, what they do is instead of relocating in the third world, they bring the third world vulnerable workers here. And, you know, many of these people that have been brought here have been in countries that have already been severely damaged by and devastated by American military intervention. And I just consider the injustice of all of this to be unacceptable. And that it also is something that has to change. We need to have an economy that grants human rights to everyone that is involved in it. And I just think that's an imperative. As you said, in the 21st century, this shouldn't be going on. But unfortunately, it's in a downward spiral, in a race to the bottom, that's going to keep getting worse until people stand up and struggle against it.
Well, we definitely appreciate you for speaking up and speaking out, and because it seems like it's almost like a double or triple whammy, because many of the immigrants are undocumented workers. Some of them are leaving oppressed conditions in the country. They come here, and to be able to find employment, this is probably, at the time being, one of the best opportunities for them. Now, is the pay low also, or is it adequate, or what?
My understanding is that, there's a variety of different wage levels depending upon the job, but I think that it's around $12 or $13 an hour as an average wage. I'm still kind of researching to get better information about exactly what it is.
But that's
not really up. That average is not up to the level of a living wage.
Right.
You know, but like I said, that's something that I want to research much more specifically to get the exact figures on. I think that, you know, that in talking to the workers, the biggest concern is safety. And the injury problem. I think that is, and not that, you know, of course, they would like to be getting more of a return for the labor that they're putting in, like everyone would, and they certainly deserve that. But I think that the really core issue, because, you know, a carpal tunnel syndrome can be permanently disabling. And you know, so this can affect their entire lives. And even if they, you know, and even if they don't get a severe injury of that sort, you're talking about work that is made far more exhausting and very hard on the body, especially being done at those kinds of rates of production.
So the necessity of a union would help to advocate for the worker. And would this union serve and I'm sure there's different ethnicities that are there in the plants.
That's right. Yeah, somewhere around 50% of the plant is Hispanic, predominantly from El Salvador and Honduras. And then I think the other 50% is there's some folks from Russia, there's some from North Africa, and there's some from Iraq and so on.
You mentioned earlier that some of them are actually brought here to work.
What was done historically. I mean, you know, you actually had, I don't know about the history of these specific plants here, you know, as to what they did or didn't do, But I know that historically, meatpacking plants actually had buses where they brought people from Mexico and so on. You know, I mean, it was very explicit. And, you know, it's just a very – the whole immigration policy that we have is so hypocritical. And it's – people don't quite understand it as a systemic reality. They see the results, but they don't know what the overall system is. And basically, it's very well known that companies – use workers that are undocumented because they're vulnerable. And yet, at the same time, the government acts as if it's completely opposed to this. And, you know, so there's this very confusing policy, but it makes more sense when you realize that they're actually not about strict observance of the law. They're about creating the kind of labor market that they need. And they need one that is vulnerable and precarious, is fearful of deportation, but they need them to be here. So I think if you look at the economic logic of it, then you can see the sense of it for certain interests. But in terms of being a consistent policy on the part of the government, no, it's not. It's not consistent. But the government is serving the interests of the corporations that benefit from the policy as it is implemented. And then it makes sense. I lived in South Dakota, and there were dairies that were created, huge dairies with like 3,000 to 4,000 cows in them. And they predominantly relied upon undocumented workers for their labor force. And the governor was involved with those dairies, and I think President Clinton was involved with it. You know, I mean, you just look at those kinds of things and you go, you know, these people aren't stupid. You know, this has to be some kind of conscious policy for the benefit of corporate America.
So they're crying out for help, and you are working and mobilizing others to be involved. Is there any indication as to when a union is coming?
Well, I think that that's going to be something that is really down the road, because I think that the UFCW wants to show that it is deeply committed to the workers, and they, in order to do that, that is a long process.
That's right.
Really getting to know the people in the community and gaining their trust through serving them, through being a force that informs them of their rights and supports them in terms of the concrete problems and issues that they have. And so I think it's very exciting that there is a union that is willing to be committed to the long term. And I think that the decisions as to when to get to a higher level of organization and so on, well, that will happen when the workers in the community are ready. That will happen. And so, you know, what I have been being told is that all of the emphasis is upon worker education, supporting the workers in terms of helping them deal with their problems, building relationships with the workers, and building relationships with the community, and then seeing where things are able to go as they build and develop. That's what I've been told in respect to this. And the worker center is going to be having its grand opening this Sunday on the 21st at 3 p.m. at 30 Commerce Drive in Harrisonburg at the Tienda La Amistad. That's off of North Liberty. It's kind of a frontage road off of there to where the Tienda La Amistad is. And they're going to be opening up an office there. And there's going to be a program there, a short program, maybe a half hour, 20 minutes at 3 o'clock, including a kind of a blessing of the center and some prayers for the success of the workers' efforts. And there's going to be participation from the workers coming there and people from the community and the religious community there.
Well, we here on Straight Talk want to make our program available to do whatever we can to help to restore this here, this cause. And we just want to thank you, my brother, for coming on the air and being able to share with the listeners how they can be concerned about what's happening here right up under their noses, and we thank you. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing?
No, I just want to say thank you to you for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. I mean, I guess I will say one very brief thing, just that, you know, to me, this is an enormous opportunity for the religious community and for the churches to really make their special contribution to the community by bringing the values and the power of the gospel to bear on the conditions of human beings on this earth, and to try to transform those into more humane and compassionate kinds of conditions. So I really look forward to the religious community becoming more and more involved in this, and I think that will make a difference in respect to what happens in this valley.
Well, thank you so much again. And if you could repeat again, you said the opening of the Welcome Center, or how did you convey
it's
that?
The opening of the Workers' Center. And that is on this Sunday, on February 21st at 3 p.m. And it is at the Tienda La Amistad, which is at 30 Commerce Drive, and that is just off to the east of North Liberty, kind of north of the Little Grill over in that area of town.
Okay. And,
okay.
And, all right. Well, thank you so much, Michael. This is Michael Snell Fikema, who's standing up and speaking out concerning some of the injustice that's happening here in the poultry industry to make a difference. And we want to encourage you to do what you can do different as well. And this has been Stan Macklin with his guest today, Michael Snell Fikema, talking about the poultry industry. And remember, whatever you're going through, it's not the outlook, but it's the uplook that can make a difference. Have a beautiful day and a wonderful weekend. And remember that the best is yet to come.